The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. We've got a great interview for you this week with Chris Stark from Radio 1 5 Live and that Peter Crouch podcast. We'll find out how he's getting on broadcasting from home and hear some stories about how he got his foot in the door at Radio 1. And in David Lloyd's Radio Moments later, Chris Evans debuts on the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. Jamie Theakston arrives at Heart Breakfast. Memories of WINS in the States. And can you imagine a day when there was no news to broadcast on the radio?
Original music for this podcast was composed by Nick Hazard.
First, though, let's chat to Radio Today's Roy Martin, still in lockdown. How's your week been, Roy?
Do you know what? That's a very interesting question, but let's just move on and say it's all going fine. We're all good. How are you?
Yeah, likewise. I've been doing all sorts this week, actually. I've been helping out with the Inquality web streams. They've been doing a virtual NAB show because it would have been the NAB show in Vegas this week. So lots of people are kind of showcasing their products online instead. So I've been helping out with IPDTL and SIPTA audio and stuff. And I built myself a SIP codec from a Raspberry Pi computer, which I impressed even myself doing that.
I was going to ask you how that went because it's so much going on. I didn't actually tune in. So I was going to ask you how that went. Did you actually build the whole thing from scratch like you said you were going to do?
I did, yeah. I'm holding it in my hand right now.
What about the Pi?
It was the first time I've ever had a Raspberry Pi, and yeah, I got all the bits in a box. I started at the beginning of the show when we went live and had it all built and ready to connect by the end of the hour, and it's nice. It's got like a little touch screen, and it's got USB slots and an Ethernet port, and you plug your microphone and headphones into it and tap on the screen, on the touch screen, and get connected in decent quality. You can buy them ready-made as well. In fact, Chris Stark, who's on our podcast later on, I helped him get one of those, and it's what he's been using for the last 3 or 4 weeks to broadcast live on Radio 1 and 5 Live and all over the place, just using his Raspberry Pi touch computer thing.
Wow, fantastic. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's nice. So, so I've been doing a bit of actual work for a change in amongst kids being back at home school and all the rest of it. But there we are. Life goes on. And there's been a bit of radio news as well. The kind of story of the last, over the last year, really, has been the big CMA stuff at Bauer. And obviously, we talked a few weeks ago about that all now being approved and given the go-ahead. And finally, Bauer have got their mitts on it in the last week, and they can start doing what they want with their new train set.
Yeah, this just seemed like it's been going on forever. Did we not talk about this last week? Has it actually only been 7 days since it happened?
Yeah, I think it happened last Wednesday or Thursday, didn't it? Yeah.
Okay, it's crazy. What are they going to do? That is the $64 million question, isn't it? Which radio stations are going to change names? Which are going to merge? Which are going to move? Are any going to move, mix, or merge? You know, they could have just bought the stations to carry on running them as they are. I presume most of them are actually making money. So, we'll see. Mm. Only a small handful of people know the answer to that question, and all we can do is wait, I guess.
Yeah, and I suppose the situation we're in at the moment with incomes being down means that they can now do some temporary stuff if they want to do some program sharing and that kind of thing now that they're allowed to. So it perhaps might ease things for them a little bit in the next couple of months before they make a long-term plan.
You never know. I'd just leave it as it is for now, personally. But it'd be interesting to see what happens.
And talking about some changes at Hits Radio. So Greg Burns has moved from breakfast to afternoons. He's doing 1 till 4 on Hits Radio, leaving Fleur and James on breakfast with no Greg. And it sounds like this is because Bauer seems to be suggesting audiences at breakfast time are down because people are not going to work as much. So listening in the morning is perhaps shifting to a bit later in the day. And people are listening right through the day. So they decide to put Greg on in the afternoon.
Okay. That makes a whole lot of sense to me. I don't know about you, but that seems to be their excuse and they're going with it. So let's go with that.
Let's move on. So a request for more support from the government. This is Radio Centre. You people might have seen a lot of the national newspapers this week. In fact, pretty much all the national newspapers had this big wraparound advert from the government telling people to stay at home and stay safe and putting out some of those public safety messages. And radio went, hang on a minute, can't we have a bit of that, please? And the government is advertising on the radio, obviously. But I think Radio Centre thinks it could do more to support commercial radio with adverts. And and also with some help on other costs that they've got at the moment.
So the newspaper industry are saying, go out and buy a paper to read the front page, which says stay at home. Makes perfect sense. Yeah, everything's
making
sense.
Stay at home and
listen
to the radio instead. Yeah.
Yeah. Or read the newspaper online. How about the newspaper industry stop printing paper and all that and just go online? And everybody will be happy, right? They'll save a bit of money on their printing costs, bit of ink, bit of machinery.
Yeah.
Just go online. That's where it's at.
Yeah. So the ministers are quite keen to say, oh, we're doing our bit to support the newspaper industry because it's struggling with advertising revenue, so we're spending all this money on advertising. And radio went, okay, yeah, do that for us too, please.
Yeah, but this is a good excuse just to kill the newspaper industry, isn't it? Surely. This is the moment that it finally goes.
Well, a lot
and
of
it just goes online.
A lot of people working in it, and you know, Times Radio might never come on air if the Times doesn't exist. So, you know.
Maybe they know that the Times newspaper will no longer exist, and that's why they're running a radio version of it instead at some point in the not-too-distant future. Who knows when that's going to launch?
The other thing that Radio Centre were asking government for is some help with fixed costs over the next year, so transmission and licence fees and that kind of stuff. And I know Kelvin McKenzie has been quite vocal again about transmission providers and their costs. You can read his views on the Radio Today website. The Radio Academy have put out their details of their new emergency fund for people working in radio and audio, particularly freelancers hit by a lack of work at the moment because of the coronavirus crisis. They put together some money from the Radio Academy Benevolent Fund and Audio UK, the BBC, Audible and Real World, up to £1,000 of help you can get. And all the details about that at radioacademy.org. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, this is great news for anybody who's missed out on a bit of freelance work or something like that since the whole thing began, and they genuinely are struggling. So fill out the form and see what happens. They're all people like you and me, you know, saying yes or no to these. So if you can, if you've got a genuine case, then there's some money there for you.
Just to be clear, it's not me and you saying yes or no to these things. There are other people. It's not me and Roy making
decisions. Oh, yeah, yeah, no. No, it's not me. No, it's the other guys, but
yeah,
it's people like me
us.
And you.
Yeah, people like us.
And normal people.
Speak for yourself. The other thing that they've said is that, you know, it might be that you need to buy some equipment or some software or something to enable you to do some freelance work from home. And so that's the kind of thing you could put in your application and say, I need £100 to help me pay for this or whatever. So that's a really good idea. And talking of cash at the moment, government money from the Audio Content Fund, they're announcing projects kind of every week at the moment. And the first programmes for Heart from the public money have been announced.
Yeah, this is Communicore's version of Heart. So Global haven't applied for this. It looks like it's Communicore or a production company on behalf of Communicore that's going to get this money. It's just going to broadcast on the Heart licences in Yorkshire, North Wales and Hertfordshire as well. They're basically short audio blogs from key workers that are local to those areas. So, that sounds like a good one. And there's others as well, aren't there, this week?
There are. Yeah, Union Jack and Jack Radio are going to do The Show Must Go On. It's about sports stars and what they're doing during the isolation. Sporting Memories on Talk Sport, which will work with a charity tackling dementia and depression and loneliness, using kind of reminiscences about sport. And I think there's a radio drama called Connections, looking at isolation in relation to disabilities. It's going out on community radio stations produced by disabled writers and performers. And Caring for Carers, some short form interviews going out on 38 community radio stations and 4 commercial radio stations as well. I think that's going to be on Dales Radio, where I do a show, amongst other places.
It is, yeah. Put together by John Dash, I believe, as well. Good stuff.
Fabulous. And I'm sure there's still opportunity if you're a production company or you're a radio producer, freelancer maybe, and you want to work with a production company to put together an idea of some programming to do during the coronavirus crisis. There's a pot of money there. Just search for the Audio Content Fund online and you'll find out more details about it.
It's free money, people. Fill your boots.
And from free money to free radio. Do you see what we did there? Not actual free radio in Birmingham, but the concept of free radio. Some tributes this week to Ronan O'Reilly, the founder of Radio Caroline. who's died, sadly, aged 79. He was diagnosed with vascular dementia a few years ago. And we've got a lot to thank him for, haven't we, Roy?
Yeah, pretty much independent radio. Before he started Radio Caroline in 1964 with his Band of Merry Men, it was pretty much the BBC for the prior 20-odd years. So, yeah, thank you to Ronan for Radio Caroline and everything that came after it in the UK. Things would have been a little bit different today if it wasn't for him. I'm guessing maybe somebody else would have you know, done the same kind of thing and invented in independent radio in the UK. But, yeah, it was him that did it in 1964. And my uncle, my late uncle, who was always a bit of a geek when I was growing up, he always had the big hi-fis and the big speakers and all the rest of it. And he introduced me to Radio Caroline and told me all about Ronan O'Reilly. And, yeah, so I've always looked out for him. It would have been great to have interviewed him for Radio Today since we've been operating over the last 15 years or so, but we never got the chance, which is a shame. I'm sure he would have been a wonderful person to speak to, but I believe somebody else has.
Yeah, the great Johnny Walker, who was obviously a massive part of Radio Caroline's history as well, a few years ago now spoke to Ronan, and we thought we'd play a little clip here on the podcast.
It was Easter Saturday, midday, and quite a funny thing happened on that day. We had taken a restaurant in Fleet Street for the press launch, and of course we got all the press in there. What we didn't know is that this restaurateur had been quite adventurous with his heating system. So he had covered the entire restaurant in copper, the walls, the ceiling. He had copper behind the decorations to heat the restaurant. Due to this copper, obviously, no,
I know what's coming.
No signal could get in. So I had this massive great Zenith. I don't know whether you remember those radios. They were sort of an American-built set that was like some military purpose, but apparently could get a signal from anywhere at any time. We switched this on around midday, and of course, absolute silence. Nothing came through, and we thought, my God, something's gone wrong. Maybe the ultimate dreaded Admiralty ship has bumped into some other little ship floating out there. All kinds of dreadful thoughts, paranoia spread quickly. And I don't know, I honestly to this day don't know what made me do it, but I lifted the Zenith and I walked out of the restaurant, which was a little distance out into the street, followed by all these media folk. And the moment we hit the street, blasted, in came the sort of test signal, which was Ray Charles.
That's the fabulous Ronan O'Reilly, founder of Radio Caroline, who sadly died this week, aged 79. A lot of people have been highlighting that actually, if it wasn't for what Ronan and Radio Caroline did, commercial radio, and a lot of what the BBC does now, could have looked quite different in the UK. Because, of course, after the pirate radio stations in the late 60s, Radio 1 was born, and the BBC started doing pop music and all that kind of stuff as well. So, a real trailblazer in the 1960s. And I was surprised how young he was. So in 1964, when he launched Radio Caroline, he was 24. Can you imagine a 24-year-old kind of inventing a whole new type of radio, essentially, now, and creating this whole new landscape for the world, essentially?
Actually, yes, I could in this day and age. But back in 1964, no, probably not as much. But it was a revolution back then. And I'm sure anybody who went out to the ship and tuned into your all-day music station on 199 would have thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of people reminiscing about it on the social media.
Fab. Talking of Radio 1 and the next generation of talent, he's in his early 30s now, but Chris Stark has been a big rising star at Radio 1 over the last few years, and I'm delighted to say we got him on this podcast next. He's coming up here on the Radio Today programme. And I will talk to you next week, Roy.
Speak to you next week. Loving your awareness.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio, except the way you make it. Radio Today.
This is the Radio Today programme, and so many presenters working from home at the moment. Not many, though, have I seen broadcasting from their front room at 11 in the morning with a can of beer, or should I say a glass of lager, on the mantelpiece. Not only has he been on Radio 1, he's been doing his weekly Five Live show from the lounge, making twice as many episodes as usual of the award-winning That Peter Crouch podcast. I think that's enough build-up. It's Chris Stark. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. Yes, I'm in the living room currently at the moment. It's a strange existence, and it really hit home last week. We were covering Greg James and doing the Radio 1 breakfast show, which for me and for most radio nerds is the most iconic radio show in the world.
Yeah.
And I just had a very surreal moment last week where I'm in the corner of my living room because it's the closest I can get to the router. And I can look out the window here and see all the other houses on my road and, you know, people jogging past. And yeah, there was a real moment where I had this realization that the Radio 1 breakfast show was effectively coming from my little living room. And yeah, it's kind of special, but equally has taken a lot of sort of hobbling together to get to this stage where it could be in good quality enough. And I should firstly say thank you so much for being the person that, when I sent out the SOS, came back and basically sorted me out with all the equipment that was needed.
Well, we'll talk about the tech and what you're using and what you're using for different things in a moment. But I suppose on that point about doing the Radio 1 breakfast show from home, had you gone to the boss, had you gone to Allard, you know, 6 months ago and said, oh, you know, we're covering on breakfast for Greg. You know, is there any chance I could just do it from home? It would have been a flat no, but things like this have made it happen that next time you ask, when we're back in normal times, they go, yeah, why not? It worked all right.
Maybe. I don't think they'll ever use it. You know, the odd time that, say, we've missed the taxi or maybe had a bit of a night out the night before and we're cutting it a little bit fine. I don't know if the excuse will be that we were just planning on working from home anyway. But no, it's brilliant. For me, it's been worth the investment regardless because it's been fun apart from anything else, but also you know, the equipment to a certain extent pays for itself because it's great being set up at home like this. Like any nerd will tell you, it's an amazing feeling to have all this equipment and being able to do the job I love from my home. Don't get me wrong, I miss MBH, I miss Radio 1 studios, I miss all the guys that work there and seeing them daily, but we've adapted, and I think we're making it work. And it does take a lot of changes, actually, even in the kind of the way you talk, the way you present. You have to be mindful. And Alid actually did call me to remind me of that at one point. And he was bang on in that you have to remember when you're broadcasting from home as well that you're very comfortable, and the way you project your voice will obviously be different. But also the things that you talk about, and the manner in which you talk, it will be slightly different. So what you can end up having is a situation where, for those people listening to the radio show, it can sound a bit like, for example, Scott Mills being in amazing quality, and then me just kind of almost being like Gogglebox, you know, and kind of reacting to stuff that he's saying. And it's sounding a bit of a different balance to what people would normally hear. And you just got to be mindful of all of that. And I've got to say, though, it's been extraordinary how there's no delay, how we can still make the show that we normally do. And you know what? I don't get almost the biggest compliment to the setup that we've got here is that I don't really get any messages about it. No one seems to notice. So we've got the best of both worlds here, where we can reflect our audience and I can be from home, like much of our audience is, and kind of respecting everything that's going on around, but in the quality that people would expect from a station like Radio 1.
And how are you finding it as a co-presenter in terms of not having that eye contact? Are you actually on a video call at the same time as your audio connection so you can see each other? Or?
Yeah, it sort of depends on the job. So with Radio 1, me and Scott have been obviously working together for years. And so you're right, there is a lot of kind of visual cues that we have between us. And actually, maybe we just take for granted how we work, but we do have something very special, me and Scott. And we don't need to kind of write out every link, and we sort of know what each other's going to do in those links. So yeah, it is a bit more of a challenge when I can't see him the same way. So into the second week of us covering the breakfast show, we decided to try and rig up, you know, a way that we could see each other. However, the problem with that is that you're still ever so slightly in delay in a different way to the audio. But it was a good way of having a talk back. So, you know, when the songs were playing, we could talk about links and we could talk about how we were going to take on certain bits. So yeah, we've given it a go. To be honest with you, I found that the radio has taken a bit of adapting to get into, but I feel like we've got our rhythm anyway. So yeah, it would be great to be in a studio and being able to kind of look at each other. And I do sort of miss those desperate times where I'm sure Scott won't mind me saying this, where for example, the next song isn't loading in, or there's some sort of issue, some tech issue that Scott is desperately trying to sort out. And he just gives me the gesture to kind of just chat shit, chat anything you can, you know, because I just need you to keep talking so I can have the time to figure out this small sort of tech problem. And he's the very best at that. So I do kind of miss that. But I do think we're working it well, and I would hope that anyone that enjoys our radio show is still enjoying the quality that we can provide in these times. And then again, the Peter Crouch podcast that you mentioned earlier, we're recording those twice a week, and that's taken a hell of a lot of adjusting because we're normally sat around in a pub together, and that does rely a lot more visually, I think. So we make that work by we're actually doing three separate things. I'm recording it locally. We're recording it through something called Zencaster, which is new to me. And we're monitoring via FaceTime. So it's one hell of a setup. And the running joke is that my Wi-Fi isn't good enough to manage it. I think it's a myth, personally. But yeah, it's all just adapting. And I think that's what everyone would say in radio right now. And in every industry, actually, is that there's just a huge amount of adapting and just hoping that people enjoy it. I actually also think that people are a lot more, I wouldn't say forgiving. I just think it reflects the times, how a lot of people are broadcasting at the moment. And that's important because ultimately the most important thing that we should be doing as presenters is reflecting our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've tuned in, I think I texted you, didn't I, when I was listening in the car to Radio 1, and you couldn't tell that you were at home. It was just you and Scott having a chat. Obviously, if there's a bed running in the background and stuff, it loses some of the room noise. And the same with the podcast. You know, you wouldn't know that you're all in your own homes. And it sounds like Crouch is allowed in a posh living room that he's in his house that he's only ever been in twice just to do the podcast.
I think it's great. We actually recorded one last night, and that one comes out tomorrow. So we're doing these twice a week. And I feel like we've finally hit our rhythm with that. We've kind of got over Wi-Fi issues. And the main thing's monitoring, because I believe you can get the quality in terms of recording. The monitoring in these situations where you've got, you know, three presenters, sometimes a producer on the line, maybe someone that's making social content. I find that the monitoring, when we started trying to figure all this out, was a huge issue because it was always lagging. But I find that on each one of these projects that I'm involved in at the moment, we've kind of got to grips with that. I feel very, very lucky that I've got this set up because I really notice the difference. And I hear a lot of people struggling with kind of tech issues around broadcasting at the moment. And I do think, as any presenter would say, they just want the best quality that you can get from the situation. I kind of believe we're close to that at the moment.
And in terms of the actual kit that you've got then, I know you've got a Rodecaster, and then you've got one of these USB SIP boxes to connect you in quality as well.
Yeah. So a lot of people are using the Rodecaster. I know this because I noticed the price on them kind of went up quite quickly into, you know, into the whole coronavirus thing. However, they're an amazing bit of kit. So when I was first trying to figure out what I needed to do, our first thoughts, and it was actually Five Live's suggestion, our producer at Five Live, because we do a Saturday morning show, which again is recorded differently, actually. We kind of record the audio at our end of things, and then it's matched up with a producer, and it's kind of wonderfully edited. I think the show that goes out on Saturday, you really wouldn't know that we weren't in MBH. I love that Saturday morning show and how it's sounding. But yeah, the original idea was perhaps we just record through Zoom and then basically just match up the audio and edit it. I feel that the Rodecaster has been a step up from that. And on a personal level, I've loved playing around with it and being able to, you know, record the odd thing at home and even put callers into it if we want. So we've got a situation with Five Live where I've got a Rodecaster, our producer's got a Rodecaster, and Scott's got a Rodecaster. So we've all got the same kit, but the producer is, I think, loving. His name is Emlyn. I don't know if you know him. Shout out, Emlyn. But he's absolutely loving being able to put callers through that bit of kit. And it's working really well. We have a number of guests on that Saturday show. The last Saturday show that we did had about four or five different guests. And they're coming through in amazing quality, plus callers, plus, you know, everything that we normally do on that Saturday show. So I'm really happy with that. I feel the Rodecaster kind of holds its own. It's dead easy to use. For me, recording the podcast and then transferring it to the computer to then send it off is as simple as can be. So for anything recorded locally, the Rodecaster has been, you know, an amazing investment. The absolute winner for me is the Dispatch Box. So I've had to learn a lot about this because the second I saw the kind of the coronavirus pandemic situation developing, I realized that there was going to come a time where we weren't all going into MBH. And it was becoming apparent, you know, slowly, bit by bit, the BBC was adapting. And also, on a personal level, there's a couple of reasons why I really started to feel not very comfortable about going into London. Just because, you know, I live with someone that is technically in one of the groups that would be really badly affected by coronavirus, potentially. So I was really keen to get a setup at home that I could try and maybe take to the bosses at Radio 1 and say, look, it sounds good. And I've got to say, Radio 1 were really, really supportive. However, I just wanted to get as much advice as possible. And I did. And I spoke to yourself, actually. And I learned a lot about the Dispatch Box. And I've never understood when we go and do OBs, how on earth we get put through to Radio 1. It's never been really my area of expertise. I feel like I've learned a lot. And the box is great because I took it to the guys at Radio 1 and they kind of configured it so that I can literally at a touch of a button connect to Salford or connect to MBH. Brilliant quality. One of the best things I've seen in ages is that on the desk on Scott's end, it's got my name on the fader, which I'm absolutely loving.
I've got your name on my fader here as well.
Yeah, fantastic. It's just the best. So yeah, it's been such an easy solution to get the quality of the microphone and everything I've invested there. The Rodecaster, the mixer, which does a great job. It has some neat little effects and things like that, but seems to process the mic brilliantly. And then the sit box, which I just absolutely love. And I love this feeling that I'll be able to use this whenever to connect into the BBC in quality, or indeed any studio. It's just, for me, I have an interest to a certain extent in all the technology around what we're doing. However, I haven't got an expertise. And I've got to say, this box has been an absolute game changer. So thank you so much. When I put the call out saying, look, I've got this Rodecaster, what do I need to do? And I did some research and I found your name and I found found the big man's name as well. And he was so good to give me a call later that day that you got me in touch and just explain how it can work, how easily it can work. And yeah, it was a bit of an investment, but not very much, and totally worth it. And I do think this kit, given the quality of it, really does sort of pay dividends.
Well, since we got you on, we ought to really pass the pod, because I know that's what you're doing, trying to get publicity for your podcast all over the place. So series 4 has just started. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, this Crouch podcast. It really took off very quickly, didn't it? What, 18 months ago?
It was an amazing experience. It is an amazing experience. It's something that I got approached about doing, and I was really keen because I was a big fan of Crouchy. I had my ideas about kind of what I would want to do with the podcast, and I spoke to the editor that had kind of approached me about it, and he was talking about, you know, a few other people being involved and that kind of thing. And really what I pitched was, to a certain extent, a lot of what I loved about a podcast called You, Me and the Big C, which was this feeling of community, feeling that you're part of something. And that's what I really liked about podcasts at that time. I also felt sports podcasts in the main were quite stuffy. They could be quite snooty. I felt like if you didn't know loads about the sport, it was kind of unappealing to listen to them. And Crouchy's such an amazing character, and he's an entertaining character as well as a brilliant athlete and sportsman. And at the time, he was still playing football.
I know. I've got a season ticket at Burnley, me and my son.
So
we saw all 5 touches of his ball in the Premier League season last year.
Yeah, he didn't get a lot of game time, but the podcast has just been something that surprised us all. I've got a lot of respect for how the BBC kind of left us to it, because the podcast itself, in a traditional sense, I would say is quite un-BBC. And we just enjoy having a few drinks. We chat football. We have a really good community of people that listen, and we feed off those stories. And then we have these kind of wonderful moments like Crouch Fest and the Samrat
Parched,
a show that we did from the Samrat Curry House. And yeah, more recently Parched, which was going to be a bigger reveal. It became this sort of mystery. Who is Parched? Very hard thing to explain if you've never listened to the podcast before. But basically, there was a footballer and he was sort of nameless. But Crouchy would tell us stories about him. And we finally revealed Parched. But because coronavirus had sort of taken hold, we had to do the reveal in a very different way. And it was actually our first go at sort of recording things in isolation. It took forever. However, it was a really good episode and people's response to it was brilliant. But yeah, what we normally do is we get to the end of a series and we leave it a few months and then kind of regroup, go again, just kind of give it everything. And it just feels that at the moment, I see a lot of people putting out going, well, just because people want a sense of normality. It's not, that's not even the main reason why I was kind of up for throwing out more podcasts. For me, it just feels like we can. And therefore we should. And rather than wait a few months, you know, why not just bring it forward? And if it makes one person smile, if it helps break up the journey for one person that's going, working on the front line in whatever they're doing, any kind of key worker, then it's totally worth it. So we're not bothering so much about the length of the podcast. You know, obviously we care about the quality of it, but we just wanted to be there as kind of three mates that I think... From a lot of the messages I get so many messages from people where the podcast seems to be a bit of light relief. And weirdly, you know, you get very powerful messages. I never take it for granted. I feel so lucky to be a person that people feel that they can contact and want to kind of talk about how they feel. And that's very, very special. And I notice it a lot with this podcast. I notice it a lot with our show on Radio 1. But we could keep doing the Radio 1 show. So it just felt right that we brought the podcast back. And I spoke to the boys and they all agreed. And it's nice being able to bring this series out a bit early. I just hope people enjoy it. And that's the main reason it's there, is just for people to enjoy.
Yeah, without wanting to sound too kiss-assy, I really like it. I mean, I'd go to the football with my son, but I'm not a massive football obsessive. And there's just been some great laugh out loud moments. So if people are kind of sat at home looking for something to listen, catch up on some of the old stuff, because the bits with Crouchy going through his phone and ringing people up, and it was just, yeah, really, really good.
It's been an amazing journey. Honestly, over the last, since we started, I've had some of the funniest moments, you know, us three in a pub, just chatting nonsense. It's such a release, and I hope it's a release for anyone that listens to it. And if you haven't heard it at all, and even if you think Crouchy's a complete arsehole, you know, just just like give it a listen. See what you think. And if you want to be part of that community, we, you know, we'd love to have you there. And it's mad. Like someone told me the other day, we've gone through some, I think it was 25 million downloads or streams or whatever it is that measurement is. I just heard 25 million and it blew my mind, because there's nothing clever about it. It's quite basic. It's just three guys in a pub. We chat about a lot of things. But for some reason, that's kind of what people like about it. And what I like about it. And actually, we've just stuck to our guns with it. And I'm pleased to be involved. So yeah, if you are listening to this and you fancy giving it a listen, please do. It'd be great.
Yeah. And podcast of the week in the Radio Times this week. So congratulations on that. And I think there's been some stuff on there that you wouldn't normally hear on sports radio programs. So some of the interviews with referees. I know you had Andre Mariner on last week and Mike Dean, and just Crouchy's Dean, stories. Yeah. It's different. And it's different in a good way.
I think that's what we're going to do with this series. I think our plan is to, you know, to treat this time as it is very different. We'll treat it differently. And we're going to get, we've never really had guests on the podcast. So we're going to get a lot more guests on for this. I know a lot of people are doing this kind of thing, but I just think it's a good excuse to bring, you know, footballers, people that we chat about, bring a few people that enjoy the podcast maybe, but bring them into the world. And, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, which at the moment, because there's only so much you can do from your home, are going, right, let's just get some guests on. But I do truly believe with this podcast, it's not something we would have normally done in any other series. And this is a special series. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how it works when we've got different people kind of coming into our world. For example, we've got Kasper Schmeichel coming on the next podcast, which will be great because we haven't really had many other footballers coming onto this podcast. And weirdly, we've been asked by quite a few of them if they can do. And I think now's a good time to do it. So yeah, Casper Schmeichel should be interesting.
Cool. I look forward to that one. Well, we've spoken for far longer than I'd agreed to speak to you, but I just...
No, honestly, I've got no excuse. I've got nowhere to be. So anything you want to talk about, we can do it now. It's all good.
Well, the only thing I wanted to really chat about, because you come across as such an enthusiast about radio, and I know you had a long journey to get on the air because you did hospital radio and you did student radio and you went helping out at radio stations. And that big break you got at Radio 1 was partly, you know, Scott getting you in for a couple of days a week and then you just hanging around. And it's that story, I suppose, that is a great inspiration to people wanting to get into radio, that you just hang around all day and help out with odd jobs at Radio 1, and then suddenly you're this massive name.
Oh, well, it's really nice of you to say that. I think in all of this, I've said this quite a lot, like, I've never felt like I am a Radio 1 presenter, because I've always held it in such high esteem. And a lot of people probably wouldn't even understand how much of a kind of radio nerd I've been growing up.
They would. And listeners to this would.
But I feel so lucky to be on Radio 1. And I think most people that end up on Radio 1 do have a certain amount of luck. But yeah, for me personally, it started when I was about 12 years old. And I remember I had this little electronic set. It was called a 50 to 1 set, or 100 to 1. And you could basically make 100 things from this little board. You connect the wires. It was sold in a shop called Tandy. Ho!
You're not old enough to remember Tandy, surely.
No, do you know what? I'm talking about, I must have been so young. I must have been 7, 8 years old, something like that. And I'd get my mum into the room next door and I could make a little radio station that could be picked up on the radio like meters away. And that's really where it started. And hospital radio, I remember I took it so seriously. I planned the shows. I think I was the youngest person there. And then it just felt like a natural progression. Student radio, I did as much work experience as I could. In fact, the very first person to get me work experience in the studio was Pete and Jeff, actually, when they did the Virgin Breakfast show. And of course, you know, Pete sadly passed away not that long ago, so it's been amazing hearing all the tributes to him. But yeah, personally, he was my very first kind of day's work experience at a radio station. It was sorted by a guy called John Connerty, who was good friends with is it Tony Morey or Toby Morey? And
Tony.
Everyone seems to know him. And yeah, he let me come in and I really enjoyed it. I remember being so inspired. They had a load of dogs outside. They were doing some sort of dog football kind of thing in Golden Square. I just thought, this is mad. Like, this was everything that I enjoyed doing with student radio, where there was an element of freedom and you could do what you want. But it was done to next level and these guys were professionals and the studio was amazing. And everything was exciting and they were funny. They were such a funny breakfast show. I loved it. And yeah, I loved Radio 1. I was the biggest Radio 1 fan. So I always had in my head that I wanted to work for Radio 1, but I just couldn't find a way in. I did everything. I used to answer the phones on the Sunday surgery. I did everything I could to get any kind of contract and get into the building. And yeah, I got a really good break because I'd become friends with Scott. And we'd been DJing a couple of nights on the same night and sort of became good friends. And he was so supportive of me. You know, he got me in touch with people that were working at certain commercial stations and things like that. However, my demo was just garbage. It was so awful. But I didn't really know what I was then. And this is the funny thing. Back then, I tried to get into Radio 1 by pretending to be a Radio 1 presenter. And it didn't work. And weirdly enough, I've done all right for myself by being on Radio 1. The better kind of part of that time was when I just accepted who I was and decided, you know what, you're not Scott Mills, you're not Chris Moyles, you're not Fern Cotton, you've just got to find your own lane and represent it fully. And I have so much love for how Radio 1 kind of stuck with me, because I've always had this feeling that at some point they're just going to get rid. And it's a really odd feeling, but I think everyone feels like that. And I've changed a lot, you know, from when I started to kind of how I am now. I've learned a lot. I've learned from the very, very best radio presenters in the world. And that can't not have an effect. And now I feel I'm in a real place right now where I kind of know what I represent. I know my skill set. I know what I'm good at. I know what I enjoy. And that's really powerful for me personally, as someone that's always felt like a bit of an imposter at Radio One. But yes, you're right. The major bit of advice was, as soon as I could get in through the doors, as soon as I could get past Claire Marvin in the old Yolding House reception, I didn't want to leave. So I would turn up. I was only on 2 days a week in really defined links. But what I would do is I'd be there all day and I'd work on the show. And I'd, you know, even if they had no work for me, I'd try and get involved in any way that I could. And I became useful. And then my big break came. I don't know if I should say this.
It was the Mila Kunis interview, wasn't it? Was it the Mila Kunis interview?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, to be fair, that was kind of how it, on air, I think that's how it worked. But in my personal kind of quest to being on Radio 1, my big break came when someone from HR announced that they were having to kind of change all the computers in Yolding. And because of this, they had to kind of work out who was sitting at what desk. Now, because I'd been there every day, what they didn't realise is, although I was sat at a desk, they didn't realise that that wasn't my desk. So then, this is amazing, they wrote me into the desk plan. So I then got an email from someone saying, yeah, just to confirm, this is going to be your desk. And it kind of showed where everyone was going to be sitting. And at that point, I had a desk in the Radio 1 office. So I just was like, brilliant. So I went in every day. So even when I wasn't working on the show, as in I wasn't kind of doing stuff on air, I'd kind of write stuff and I'd try and come up with little prank ideas and a lot of it was rubbish. But it was a huge learning process. And as I said, like, I really feel like I've learned over a period of time with the best radio presenters in the world. And it's led to now. And I feel so lucky that I get to do the jobs that I do. But equally, I'm really proud of how well the shows are doing and how well the podcasts are doing, but so proud of what me and Scott are doing at the moment, because I look around at, you know, radio in general, and radio's had a lot of changes. And I feel our show is doing the right things and is representing the right people and is something very, very special on radio at the moment. And it honestly is just an honor to be part of and to be involved in and to work on every day. And just utterly insane to look back at those hospital radio days and student radio days and go, God, this literally was everything that you wanted, and you're doing it right now.
It's so great to hear the new generation of radio people like you coming through who are still such geeks, because everybody thinks all the geeks from the 70s and 80s are dying, but they're not, you know, the kids today.
But the thing is, I think it's different, because I still, is revere the right word, you know, these brilliant BBC presenters, so brilliantly spoken, you know, wordsmiths. I've never felt that I'm that kind of presenter. I really look up to those people so much. I don't feel it's the same game per se that I'm playing. I don't feel I'm on their level. However, I do feel I represent something different. And as I said, right now, it feels like the show is exactly the right show at exactly the right time. And that's what people are loving about it. And I do have days. I'll never forget the first day I went in to record a pilot at Radio 1. And I looked at the back and I remember seeing the Radio 1 logo on a kind of banner on the window at the back of the studio. And I just sat there and I just thought, God, this is unbelievable. You know, this is mad. And even then, I never really expected it to get to everything that happens now. But I'm so proud that it did. And I love radio. And I think radio is so important. And in fact, if there's one thing that this coronavirus is kind of showing up in the world of broadcasting, is how important radio is. You know, I see the messages, I see the texts that come into us, I see the tweets, I see how people need radio at this time. And I think if anyone's in any doubt as to what people think of radio, it doesn't take much searching through social media. Throughout any time of any day, you look at the Radio 1 feed, you know, you look at the messages that are getting sent into Radio 1, and it's incredible. And I've never felt more important on Radio 1 and being part of a station that is as important as it is at the moment, because you really see it. You really see it. And we were lucky to be doing Greg's show. Such an important show, you know, the start of the day, really. You set the tone. You have to try pick up what the tone of the nation is, you know. And one of the days, it was the morning after Boris Johnson had been admitted to hospital. In any other time, absolutely monumental news that would be. But a lot of people were losing their lives and a lot of people were going into hospital, and it just felt like more and more bad news day after day. And I've got so much respect for Greg and his team, because they wake up in the morning and they have to set the tone for the day. And we had the honour, the privilege of doing that the last couple of weeks. And it's unbelievable, you know, and you get it from the audience. You see the messages that are coming in, you get a feeling of what it is they want or that they need. So you can acknowledge the seriousness of everything, but then basically say, look, this is what we're here to do. And I think if you agree, this is what we're, you know, going to do for the next couple of hours. And it's amazing seeing the response. I think what Radio 1 represents right now is a product of the people. It's the feelings of our nation at the moment, and I think Radio 1 are doing a really good job of kind of getting the tone right. It's crazy times, isn't it?
It is. Right, well, we'll let you get back to that drink that's on your mantelpiece, because I know you've always got one there.
I haven't had a chance to drink it yet. I thought this would be lovely, you know, I'll just sit back, have a beer. I feel like all I've done is talk. I haven't really enjoyed it yet. News with you then? What's going on with you guys?
Well, you know, we're just plodding on. We work from home all the time here, and I make this podcast at home every single week. So it doesn't really make much difference to me, other than the fact that I'm connecting to people at home rather than in studio. So it's it's good.
I've got to say, you know, and I said it at the beginning, thank you so much for everything you did to kind of get me set up here. And it's been an incredible time that I know we'll all look back on at some point, and you know, it'll be the funny time that we did Radio 1 breakfast show from our living room. But yeah, thanks so much for actually making it happen.
Yeah, so you can hear Scott and Chris on weekday afternoons on Radio 1, Saturday mornings on 5 Live, and podcast twice a week as well. So you're working hard, even though you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, listen, I feel very lucky to be able to work. A lot of people can't at the moment. I, you know, definitely don't take it for granted. So yeah, if you're listening to this and you're new to us, you're probably not new to Scott. He's a legend. It'd be great to hear from you.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Nice one, mate. Thank you.
Ah, what a lovely guy. Another lovely guy, David Lloyd, on the way with some radio moments very soon. First, a word about Clean Feed. If you are looking for a solution to get on air remotely and you're looking for a free solution, then Clean Feed might be just what you're after. It's great for interviews and OBs, and also in times like this, co-hosting your show or presenting your show from somewhere different to the studio. Clean Feed has been designed for radio people and for podcasters. It's really simple to use to connect live quality audio over the web, and you can even record within the browser as well. Clean Feed won't cost you anything to get started. There is a completely free version as well as a paid for pro version. And get signed up today, and you could be doing your first live interview or recording or broadcasting from home within minutes. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
David Lloyd, Radio Moment.
Is it really 25 years since Chris Evans got the gig he dreamed of?
Where's the sport?
That's it.
Why is there any sport?
More goodies later, lovey.
Don't we get any sport at half
past
six?
Not this time.
Oh, I see.
Saving the best to last.
So the people
later.
Who are listening now don't want to hear sport then? Is that the deal?
Look, just get on with it, will you?
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't told about the sport. I'll do sport for you in a moment myself. Heck, let's look at the back of the papers and sort it out. Now, people have been asking me over the last couple of weeks, have I been practicing for this job for the last 2 weeks? Well, I say no. I've been practicing for this job for the last 20 years. That's what I say. Yes, it's my show. I'm here now. It's BBC Radio 1, and we're on the air.
Chris Evans, beginning as the ninth ever presenter of the Radio 1 Breakfast Show this week in 1995. He took over after Steve Wright's brief stint. Jamie Theakston is a quiet radio star, still delivering big audiences on Heart. He took over The Breakfast Show 15 years ago this week.
6.52 then on Heart Breakfast. Good morning. Welcome to Friday, the 11th of June. Jamie Theakston, Harriet Scott here. Now, as keen listeners of the show will know, we're big fans of Loose Women, the TV show, you understand?
Yeah.
Here on Heart Breakfast. And I went on that show yesterday. And I didn't realise that it was live. I thought it was because on Thursday they pre-recorded.
Jamie Theakston, who took over Breakfast on Heart 106.2 London this week in 2005, replacing Jono Coleman. And you heard his show there from 10 years ago. The 1980s saw some commercial radio casualties, and even with very little competition for radio revenues, some didn't survive. 35 years ago this week, it was farewell to this one.
If you've just tuned into GB Radio, you're wondering what's going on. You're expecting to hear Peter Milburn. Well, I'm afraid
Slight change to our programming plans. It's Colin Briggs sitting in for Peter, the last time anyone will be sitting in for anyone on GB Radio. We're going off air at 11 o'clock this morning, Santa are late. Financial problems, sadly, are the order of the day, and unfortunately, we can't carry on. It's been smashing speaking to you.
First person I met was the chairman of the radio station. I met it literally on the stairs as I got through the front door. And he said, well, that's it. It's all up. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, it's over. We're shutting down. And this kind of came as a bit of a surprise to me, as you might imagine. I still get emotional about it, which is ridiculous. I'm a grown man now. I shouldn't get emotional about things like this. But I do, because it was so important to all of us in different ways. That last morning after 11 o'clock, when the needle stopped wagging and went down to stop, it was a numbness that went through, and there was a slight hysteria about it. We were all, I don't know, halfway between laughter and tears. Obviously, the local TV stations came along to film bits and pieces later on. But the BBC, in a move which they'd never be allowed to get away with now, reconstructed the shutdown of the radio station. And if you look at the BBC archives, it's Peter who pushes the faders down for the last time, whereas it was me that actually did it.
Colin Briggs with memories of GB Radio, Gwent Broadcasting, this week in 1985. After its closure, the transmitters relayed neighbouring Red Dragon from Cardiff. The two stations then formally merged its capital now. And in the current situation, news is crucial, and a rolling news service, of course, was launched fairly recently by LBC, and 5Live is getting closer to a variant of it, at least. Now, it doesn't have sport on it, but possibly the most influential rolling news service launched this week in 1965 in the United States.
Newswatch never stops. This is WINN. You give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world.
Good evening. It's 43 degrees at 5 o'clock on this Thursday, December 21st. I'm Stan Z. Burns, and here's what's happening. A teenage woman hijacker releases five people out of 89 aboard a TWA.
We're much harder with the news. Pacing tends to be, I hate to say up. We are recognized as being faster paced, giving a harder news diet than any of our competitors would. Shorter bites of news, probably, except for major stories. I suppose what the listener is going to hear in an hour will be a predominantly current news and not as many features as they would hear on another all-news station. You never know about all-news listeners. There are people who will listen to all-news for hours at a time. There are those who will listen for maybe very short bites. There's, I suppose, a division of opinion over all news radio and whether you should program for long listening or more frequent listening. I would guess at WINS we go for the frequency, so we would look for a faster turnover of news and more of a sense of immediacy and updating stories so that you might listen to us for a certain period of time.
1010 Winds, which launched this week in 1965. But sometimes the last thing we want is more news. So let's comfort ourselves with this tale from this week 90 years ago. The story may be apocryphal, but it's worth retelling. A Good Friday news bulletin where the BBC announced, "There is no news tonight, so here's some music." And 10 minutes of piano playing followed. Helen Bowden.
This is absolutely fascinating because you have to remember that the day that there was no news came about 4 years after the end of the general strike, when Lord Reith went on air and announced the end of the strike and handed over to the Prime Minister. Actions that might not be regarded as impartial today. It was an age of deference. The government didn't tell BBC News what to broadcast, but certainly there was an accepted mode about what the public should hear about. And obviously on that day, that accepted mode and convention meant that there was nothing of significance that the public was meant to hear.
Helen Bowden. So with Lily making its debut on the BBC Home Service 78 years ago. Chris Evans taking over Radio 2 Drive Time from Johnny Walker 14 years ago.
Tonight's show's entitled Too Many Inputs Can Ruin the Output.
A St George's Day launch for BBC Radio Shropshire 35 years ago.
Now on this very special day, it's time for the very first programme from Radio Shropshire. And it's over to Diane Kemp with The Breakfast Show.
Pete Murray voted BBC Radio Personality of the Year 44 years ago.
Pete Murray. A very good afternoon to you and welcome to Open House.
Kate and William hosting the BBC chart 3 years ago.
We'll be back with Greg to reveal the number one just before 5:45 this afternoon. But to begin at number 40, this is Ed Sheeran with New Man on the official chart on Radio 1.
And my first programme on commercial radio 40 years ago, and awful it was too.
Walker Brothers there from years and years ago, and a song called The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and happy 40th. I was still a few months off being born then myself. Thanks also this week to Roy Martin and my guest Chris Stark. Hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I did chatting to Chris. Next week, another national radio presenter on the Radio Today programme. We'll talk to Leona Graham about doing her Absolute Radio shows from home as she marks 20 years since her first time on Virgin Radio at One Golden Square. We'll talk to you next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassar.